And the next case for argument is Banco del Atlántico versus Woods Industries. Mr. Heck.
May it please the court. The dismissal of this meritorious action as a discovery sanction is a gross and glaring injustice. First, there is no basis.
Your response to the deposition is, I think, gross and preposterous, really.
Your Honor.
Because Rule 30b-6 says you can depose an organization, and the organization designates a person, and he has to testify, and he has to testify to anything that's reasonably available to him, including, you know, your hundreds of thousands of documents and your 107-page complaint. And so they ask your designated witness about these charges you've made and, you know, what they're based on and all that, and your guy just stonewalls them.
Your Honor, they weren't obligated to answer those questions under Rule 30b-6.
Of course they were. You have this 107-page complaint, and so in order to prepare their defense, they have to ask you, so what is the particular false statement in, you know, paragraph 25? And when they know what that is, then they can go through their records and see if they have any, you know, response. But you didn't tell them anything, so they can't get to first base in discovery.
You say you. We're talking about HSBC.
Look, you bought the suit, and when you can't buy the suit, and as a result of buying a suit, say, oh, we can't be discovered. We don't know anything. We just bought the suit, right? That's ridiculous. That would just completely frustrate the discovery process.
Your Honor, the party that brought the suit that was involved in some of the events that gave rise to this lawsuit, Banco del Atlántico. There was a notice of a 30b-6 deposition of Banco Atlántico. The magistrate judge quashed that notice, and in lieu of a 30b-6 deposition, because there were no witnesses available to Banco Atlántico, ordered that there be the defendants could have 50, up to 50, deposition questions and related document requests in lieu of a 30b-6 deposition. By the way, they waited 1 year before they served such a set of interrogatories. They were answered promptly by Atlántico. There was no objection ever made to any one of those answers. Atlántico was the party that was involved in the credit that gave the loans, that relied upon the promises that were made. The party, HSBC, which led to the sanction order here, was not involved in any of those events.
That's irrelevant. You bought the lawsuit. When you bought the lawsuit, you became obligated to respond to discovery, not just to interrogatory requests, but to a deposition notice that would explore. You've got this sprawling complaint, huge complaint, and there are hundreds of thousands of documents, and they can't prepare their defense unless you designate a knowledgeable person who can answer their questions and pinpoint the charges and enable them to, you know, begin to prepare a defense.
What Your Honor is saying is that the witness has to be an advocate to explain the contentions and the legal basis.
This is not a contention business. This is telling them. This is not a contention. This, look, the 107 pages of your complaint contains, you know, mentions a whole bunch of alleged frauds. Well, they have a right to figure out, you know, what documents do you base this charge of fraud on? That's not a contention.
That was all answered answered, Your Honor, in the interrogatory answers that were answered by the plaintiffs.
They have a right under 30b-6 to depose and not just rest on interrogatories. Look, there's a big difference between questioning a witness and just giving the lawyers a chance to prepare an answer to an interrogatory. So if they ask you, what document is this charge of fraud based on? They're not asking you for a contention. not asking for your legal theory. They're just asking you, what document do I, the defendant, have to deal with because this is the document on which you've based your charge?
Those answers were given. Those documents were provided, and what they wanted to...
The witness did not answer any questions about those documents. The witness didn't say you have the document. The witness said, well, it's part of the scheme, and I don't have any information. I can't be more particular. That's unresponsive.
You know, it's almost like the all the appendices that are sitting on your table over there and saying, we gave you that, and that's all we have to do. Now, there's pretty strong language by the magistrate judge and the district judge saying this was a fiasco and utterly without merit and so on. Those are pretty strong words, and it looked like probably an accurate description of what was going on.
That's not correct, Your Honor, for several reasons. One, it's the questions were beyond the scope of 30B6. But beyond that...
Well, no, they're not. When you ask someone, okay, you've charged me with fraud, what is the document that you consider to be evidence of the fraud or you consider to be the fraudulent document? That is not beyond the scope of 30B6.
That was given in the interrogatory answer.
Look, and what they you're wanted. Entitled to ask a witness questions. Interrogatory does not exhaust your discovery rights for obvious reasons. They're cooked by the lawyers. When you question a live witness, you have the lawyers hovering around him, right? But nevertheless, the lawyer, contrary to what your lawyer did in the first deposition, he's not actually permitted to block an answer except on basis of privilege. Can't block it on a basis of relevance. But in any event, it gives you a lot better shot at the other side if you can ask questions that a human being has to answer rather than just serving interrogatories.
What they're trying to do in asking that kind of question where the corporation wasn't involved is to cross-examine and argue.
That is irrelevant. You bought the lawsuit. They put you in the shoes of Banco del Atlantico.
Even if we were Banco del Atlantico.
Not even if. It put you in their shoes. You can't have a situation in which by selling a lawsuit you get a procedural advantage over the defendant. That's intolerable.
No one ever took that position below. In fact,
how would you try this case if you were going to trial?
Through the documents and
produced by
the defendants and the deposition testimony of the defendants.
So you're not going to put a witness on the stand?
And the deposition testimony of former Banco Atlantico witnesses who were able to convince to come to the United States and be deposed, notwithstanding their fear of coming and becoming involved because of criminal and civil defamation actions brought by some of the defendants in Mexico. But I do want to address something else, Your Honor. The subject matter designations for the notice of HSBC were limited to HSBC's knowledge and matters that HSBC was involved in, including its involvement with Atlantico. They argued in getting that deposition, in seeking that deposition, that HSBC, by virtue of some handling of the liquidation of Atlantico, had some knowledge. Atlantico opposed the deposition on the basis that it didn't. The magistrate judge, in the November 4, 2005 order, said several relevant things, the most important of which is that HSBC was not involved in the events that gave rise to this action. Therefore, its knowledge may be limited, and the answers to some of the questions asked may quite legitimately be HSBC has no knowledge.
Well, that was your answer to all the questions.
Not totally, Your Honor. They did answer some of the questions. But the magistrate judge said, based on what was in the subject matter designations, and based upon the non-involvement of HSBC, and since she had already allowed interrogatories in lieu of a 30B6 deposition of Atlantico, the perfectly legitimate answers.
Why was she dissatisfied with your
Okay.
With the first deposition.
For the reason that you said, Your Honor, she authorized in the November 4, 2005 entry not only objection on privilege, but she did allow instructions not to answer on the basis of relevance. When she saw the deposition, she thought that, in her view, the objections were not well taken. So what she said was, no more directions not to answer on any grounds, privilege or any other. The witnesses have to answer the questions. And she said specifically, in regard to the subject matter designations. That's what the...
Well, she ordered the plaintiffs to prepare their witnesses thoroughly and completely to respond to all of the defendants' unanswered questions.
That's right. She didn't allow any...
Wait a second. Now, in the second deposition, did your witnesses answer all of those unanswered questions?
Defendants didn't interpret the order that way. They didn't go back and ask the same questions.
They didn't answer. They didn't ask any of the same questions. Is that what you're saying?
They may have in substance, but they did not go back and repeat
the questions. In substance, they didn't have.
I can't tell you that they didn't ask in substance the same but they didn't go back.
They asked in substance the same questions. Well, she said that your witnesses must be prepared to answer those questions, which they didn't do at the second deposition,
She also said, and the matters in the subject matter designations. Your Honor,
that was in addition to answering all the unanswered questions.
They didn't go back and ask.
Said if they asked them in substance, that's surely what she meant. She didn't mean they had to be verbatim.
Your
witness refused to answer questions that were, substantially the same as the ones asked in the first deposition. That was disobeying her order.
They did not refuse to answer. They answered to the best of their abilities. They answered many questions about what in documents.
No, that's.
I can point you to examples, Your Honor.
Equivocation. They got nothing from you.
They got the interrogatory answers, Your Honor.
They got nothing in the deposition.
Your Honor, they asked Mr. Fichte about Deposition Exhibit 1. And he responded, they talk about capital, increasing their capital.
Look what Judge McKinney says. The court agrees with Judge Shields, who stated, apparently the more than once, that at this point in the litigation, the defendants are entitled to know what evidence the plaintiffs have regarding their claim and how the plaintiffs intend to prove their case at trial.
You
haven't given them any of that.
You have to read that in the context of the prior order, the November 4 order, which said...
Look, you're fencing. The order, what Judge McKinney said couldn't be clearer.
Judge McKinney was...
Why do you think they blew up at you after the second deposition?
Because I think that they were trying to misuse this. They were trying to trip witnesses who were not involved in the events.
Not they. Why did the judge blow up at you after that second deposition? Obviously, he thought you were unresponsive.
But I don't think that's correct, Your Honor, in context.
It's correct that that's what he thought?
No, I think that's what he thought, but I don't think he was correct that we were unresponsive. I think what you have to go back to the subject matter designations and the magistrate judge's prior order.
Look, you should have known from what Judge Shields said in that order, that second order that I read, that your fencing about subject matter and so on wasn't going to impress her.
I don't think she changed one bit in that order. The only thing she
she changed in the order, obviously. She was deeply dissatisfied with your responses.
She was dissatisfied with the assertions of privilege and the directions not to answer.
You're right.
Well, I think we did read her right, and our reading was in good faith, Your Honor.
No.
I believe it was. And I believe the witnesses did the best they could. They testified that they prepared. They reviewed the documents. They discussed the fraud.
If they had prepared, they would have been able to answer some of the questions.
They did answer some of the
questions.
They
didn't answer the questions.
Mr. Fichte.
Show me a responsive answer.
In Exhibit 1, at pages 1035 to 39 of the appendix, Mr. Fichte said, they talk about capital in the document. This was Exhibit 1. Increasing their capital, that they promised to bring it up to a certain level, and that clearly wasn't the case. Kova on Exhibit 35, and that's at 1106 to 1108. She talks about this document being part of a fraud for creating a financial situation for Corelmex with the purpose of getting a credit from Banco de Atlantico with the intent of not paying it.
Was there a follow-up question?
There were follow-up questions. She pointed to representations about...
What was the follow-up question?
I can give you the answer, Your Honor, which
was... What was the follow-up question?
I don't know. I can give you the answer.
It's kind of critical.
The answer was she pointed to representations...
You don't know the question.
Not off the top of my head.
All right, well, we'll look at it. Okay. Anyway, your time's expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Rothfeld?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Charles Rothfeld and Mayor Brown, appearing on behalf of all of the defendants in this action. This case has a long and complicated procedural history, and it has been dragging on for a very long time. But the issue that's now before this Court is not complicated at all. The dispositive question is whether the district judge abused his discretion when he dismissed the plaintiff's claims for serious discovery abuse and for failure to comply with court orders. And the answer to that question is also not at all complicated. There was no abuse of discretion here. In response to court orders, as the Court knows, the plaintiffs produced witnesses for two sets of 30B6 depositions. And as the Court's questions have noted, Magistrate Shields and then Chief Judge McKitty described both of these depositions, both sets of depositions, as fiascos. In the first, plaintiff's counsel interposed hundreds of objections. That is, as Judge Evans noted, the magistrate labeled utterly without merit. And in the second set of depositions, which were convened to correct the errors of the first, the witnesses, as Judge Posner has noted, provided essentially no useful information in response to the defendant's questions, which led Judge McKinney, on review of the record, to find that the witnesses were either woefully unprepared or attempting to hinder legitimate discovery efforts. And this Court has held time and again that this kind of discovery misconduct warrants a sanction of dismissal. Parties have to follow the rules. District courts are entitled to issue orders to compel compliance when the parties fail to do so voluntarily, as happened here.
What happened in Texas? This case was in Texas for 7 years. What went on there?
Well, I don't think I can give you a completely satisfactory answer to that question, Your Honor. I think it sat on the court's docket for a long time, but nothing happened. There was a motion to dismiss on form nonconvenience grounds. That motion kicked around for a while. There were recusal motions. Ultimately, the motion sat on a court's desk for 2 years with no action being taken. So nothing of great substance took place there. I think perhaps the relevance.
Imagine
there,
that people in Indiana were real excited about getting this case in 2003.
Well, as I said at the outset, this case has been dragging on for a very long time at tremendous expense to the defendants. And I can't attribute all the delay in Texas to misconduct on the part of the plaintiffs, but certainly the case has been dragging on for a long time there. When it got to Indiana, much of the delay is, in fact, attributable.
What is your response to Mr. Heck's argument that the designation of the subject of the deposition was just dealt with HSBC's relationship to Atlantico rather than with the underlying Atlantico claim to which HSBC had succeeded?
Well, I think the clear expectation, Your Honor, was that there was going to be testimony about the nature of the allegation presented in the complaint. The second amended complaint here was filed by both Atlantico and HSBC. It's HSBC's complaint. And clearly under Rule 30b-6, as the Court has noted, the witness is responsible for providing evidence as to matters reasonably available to the corporate entity. HSBC was obligated to provide a witness who could testify about the nature of the allegations that it asserted in its complaint. The interrogatory answers were signed by Ms. Werdakova, who is an HSBC employee. She signed them on behalf of both Atlantico and HSBC. She was obligated to provide testimony about the nature of the facts and the evidence that were discussed in the interrogatory answers. So there is no question, as Magistrate Shields and as Judge McKinney found, that both of these depositions were fiascos in every sense.
He also said, Mr. Heck also suggested, that he gave you everything in the 50 interrogatory answers. Should have been content with that and left him alone.
I guess I have two responses to that, Your Honor. The first is that, that simply is not true. I mean, HSBC and Atlantico provided interrogatory responses, which are very long and verbose, but they provide essentially no useful information, and we invite the court to examine them at virtually any page. They are very long on bald and conclusory assertions, but they provide none of the essential information that is sought by the defense and is necessary to defend against a claim of fraud. They do not state the who, the what, the when, the where that is necessary to make any such allegation and to defend against it. And none of that information was provided by the other plaintiff's witnesses, none of whom filled the gaps that were left in the 30B6 deposition. But even if they had provided some relevant information in the interrogatories, as Judge Posner's questions suggested, that is not sufficient. It certainly doesn't justify plaintiffs' disregard and disobedience of court orders, which required them to put forward 30B6 witnesses. There was an initial order. They moved to quash the 30B6 deposition. That was denied. The court required them to put forward a witness. When that witness's testimony was a fiasco, there was a second court order issued by Magistrate Shields, who required them to provide a witness who was prepared and was ready and available to answer the questions. Their disagreement with that order and their belief that they provided information in the interrogatories, if that is in fact what they believe, does not justify them in disregarding what they've been instructed to do by the magistrate. That disregard of the court order clearly makes sanction of dismissal an appropriate outcome here. The magistrate actually bent over backwards to accommodate the plaintiffs. After the initial fiasco, she gave them a choice, at their option to elect either to forego the 30B6 process and put on their case without testimony from witnesses under their control, or at their option to reopen the 30B6 deposition with a witness who was prepared and was ready to answer the questions. And she expressly warned them at that time, if they accepted the second option, that she would be prepared to recommend dismissal of the case if the witness, in fact, did not fulfill his or her discovery obligations. When the witness did not do what they were instructed to do, when they were not prepared, when they did not answer the questions, they should have been prepared to suffer the consequences of dismissal. And as Judge McKinney explained, when he ruled on the Rule 37 motion, he recognized that dismissal is a very serious step. He recognized that it's something that should be reserved for the most serious acts of misconduct. But he found...
What in Rule 37 authorized this dismissal?
Rule 37, I believe it's Rule 37D.
I'm sorry, D? Failure to attend?
And 37B, failure to comply with court orders. I think that the witness here can be treated as having failed to attend because, in fact, although they showed up, they said nothing responsive to the questions.
And is that was 37D the basis?
I believe 37B was the basis.
Pardon?
I believe that 37B was the basis.
I can't hear you.
B, I'm sorry, as in board. Which authorizes, if I'm remembering this correctly,
to comply
with orders of the court and with discovery obligations.
Okay, so fails to obey an order to provide or permit discovery.
Precisely.
I see. B2, okay.
And as I think the court's questions have suggested, there can be no doubt that that is what happened here. We elaborate in our briefs examples of the questions that were not addressed in the depositions. We invite the court, urge the court, if it has not done so, to review the transcripts, and it will find at virtually every page examples of obstructive, non-responsive answers, which are clearly unacceptable. And as I suggested, Judge McKinney recognized the seriousness of the step that he was taking, but he found that given the egregious nature of this misconduct and the clear warning that was given to the plaintiffs and the disregard of the magistrate's order, that dismissal was the only appropriate sanction here. That was clearly not an abuse of discretion, and there are any number of cases of this court, a number of them cited in our briefs, in which dismissal has been affirmed in facts more or less identical to the ones here. And as Judge McKinney also noted, quoting this court's decisions, parties who view the litigation process as an opportunity to cause as much trouble for their opponents as possible do so at their own peril. And that is what the plaintiffs did here, and they should be prepared to suffer the consequences. I'll make one other point about the fraud and RICO claims, which are also before the court now. As we explained in our brief, under this court's decision in the Sear case, the Rule 37 dismissal applies to those previously dismissed claims as well, and plaintiffs have not taken issue with that proposition. And so if the court agrees with us that Judge McKinney did not abuse his discretion in ordering dismissal under Rule 37, this court need not and should not go on to address the fraud and RICO claims on their merits. If there are no further questions, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rothfeld. Mr. Heck, your time had expired, but we'll give you a minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, in regard to 37B as the basis for the sanction, 37B requires an order under Rule 37A ruling on the answers. There was no such order, Your Honor. I believe that if the court is going to say that the witness's answer were inappropriate, and the prior answer went to the prior order went to the direction not to answer, but if they're going to be a criticism of the answers, there has to be a Rule 37A order before there can be a Rule 37B sanction. Also, Your Honor, all of the questions that the district court criticized the answers about related to the fraud claims. There are claims here on a guarantee and a fraudulent conveyance. No one objected, raised any questions about the answers to the questions related to those matters. Your Honor, even if there were going to be a sanction that were dismissal, it was not proportionate to the wrong. The wrong that was found only related to the fraud claims, yet the whole case was dismissed. And we believe, Your Honor, in any event, that was disproportionate.
I understand your argument about 37A. It doesn't, 37B2 does not say you have to have a 37A order. It doesn't say that.
It has to be a violation of an order, yes.
Of an order. It doesn't say a 37A order.
But when you're criticizing the answers that are given to deposition questions, I believe you're required to get an order to compel an answer under Rule 37A.
No, it doesn't have to be under 37A.
If you're criticizing the answers.
Look, suppose we agreed with you that the judge had overreacted and shouldn't be dismissed. But suppose we also agreed with the magistrate judge and the judge that you were obligated to answer those questions in a responsible and helpful way. Would you do that?
We would do the best we could, Your Honor.
I don't like that best we could.
Okay.
Would you designate someone who would study the 300,000 documents and would be prepared to testify just as Atlantico would if Atlantico were still the prime defendant?
We would do that, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case.